RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
AI, artificial intelligence in New Zealand. Can it, will it help our productivity? Will it replace jobs? Is it a net gain or are there downsides? This is something we've talked about quite a bit already on this radio station. And this morning, we're going to talk more about it. The Artificial Intelligence Forum of New Zealand is a purpose-driven, not-for-profit, non-governmental organization, NGO, funded by members. The association was founded in 27, and it brings together New Zealand's AI community, including innovators, end users, investors, regulators, researchers, educators, entrepreneurs, and interested public to harness the power of AI to enable a prosperous New Zealand. And they have just presented their inaugural biannual snapshot of artificial intelligence adoption across New Zealand. The survey, conducted in partnership with Victoria University of Wellington and Callaghan Innovation, marks a significant milestone in understanding AI's impact on workplaces throughout the country. I'm welcoming on to RCR Madeline Newman, who is Executive Director of the AI Forum. Madeline, welcome to RCR. Thanks for coming on.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
Okay, what got you interested? I guess everyone has an interest now in AI, but you know the forum was established back in 2017. What got you interested in AI back then?
So I am the third executive director of the AI Forum, and the first the first ED was a guy called Ben Reid, and he's still in this field. He works out of Christchurch, really really well respected, and he ran around the country for 3 years getting people very excited about artificial intelligence, creating some incredible knowledge. An incredible amount of knowledge was gathered together about AI at the time and its uses and the potential for uses in New Zealand. And the main focus around that was about the adoption of responsible AI. So how do we do this for the benefit of New Zealand? How do we do this and stay on the side of the gods, so to speak? Second executive director was a lovely woman called Emma Nagy, and she took that knowledge base and she helped to build some really strong partnerships with government, helping them to understand what might be needed in this space in order for us to have responsible AI and have AI that's beneficial to the whole of New Zealand. And I came along about 2.5 years ago, so I had about 6 months in role before generative AI took off dramatically. And my thing has always been about activation. So having people actually do something. So we've got wonderful background of information. We've got some amazing partnerships, not just in government, but in academic institutions as well. Let's use those to build some things so that we can demonstrate how to do these things safely.
Generative AI, what exactly is that?
I guess the best way to describe it is that it's basically an interface for you with an enormous amount of data. It can help you to create new conversations. It's very good at summarizing information. It's very good at bringing stuff together. But just what it says, it generates information, as opposed to other forms of AI that might analyze. Things like that.
It's built on an ever-expanding knowledge base, which it can then generate interactions, which sound really human now, I got to say.
They do.
Freakily so. And that's ever-expanding, inflating. Is that kind of a good way of thinking about it?
Yeah. Maturing is also a good way of thinking about it. So large language models, which is what it was originally referred to as. So OpenAI has a large language model. Gemini runs off a large language model. Llama 2 is a large language model. And what they've done is bring a whole bunch of conversations together or information together in one place, and let the generative AI run over the top of that, and it produces new conversations and new summaries, I guess, of the information that's there. And so you end up with things like, and that's what, why you end up with biases, because that information has been produced by humans and we have bias. And when you run it through a machine very, very quickly all of the time, sometimes you end up with that it brings that bias into stark relief for us.
Is that the old garbage in, garbage out rule?
Very much so, yeah. And so you'll see with all of these tool sets, especially the free ones, they ask you to give a thumbs up or a thumbs down for their answer sort of thing. And it's really important that when you see it providing wrong information or information you think is biased, that you give it a thumbs down and tell it why. Tell it off. It doesn't have any feelings. You're not going to
tell it off.
It's not, you're not
AI.
Or tell it to try harder.
Yeah.
There have been some classic examples of where it's produced, so gender-biased information. So I know this is not the case anymore, but several months ago, if you'd asked it to name the top 10 tennis players in the world, it would have ignored the Williams sisters, which would be a bit of an error, right?
Yeah, big time.
But now it doesn't, sort of thing. So it's learning along the way, and it's only as good as the information that we give it.
What do the results of your snapshot show for us here, do you think?
So the things we actually had a launch event last night, and there was a panel of people there talking about it, and that was the first question: what was the thing that you found most surprising about the report? And there were two key figures that stood out. One was that 96% of people who have adopted AI, so 96% of the respondents who had adopted AI, experienced efficiency gains. So we weren't expecting it to be that high. We knew it would be high, but not close to 100%.
Yeah.
And the other thing that was surprising is that only a reported 7 or 8% of those who had adopted AI also reported losing any members of their staff, any employees as a result. So that means that 92-93% of adopters of AI have either maintained or increased their workforce.
Because that's one of the big worries, isn't it? Is workforce replacement. I know just anecdotally, people in finance back rooms of quite large companies, a lot of the, I suppose, menial invoice processing now is done by AI and has eliminated jobs. I guess there are areas of work that will be taken out in that way. And if it's replaced by other jobs in other areas, I guess in the end, it doesn't matter too much. But how much of, okay, those are early results, but people who worry that there could be a huge white-collar job replacement, you know, thing happening over a maybe not a very long period of time. Do you think there's anything too much to worry about? Because that could change a country's economics as well.
Absolutely. So there's a couple of things at play here. So one is, so your example of financial services, and I'm really familiar with that world. I spent a long time in financial services. They're probably some of the first most stark examples of how adopting artificial intelligence, not generative AI, but necessarily, but previous forms, like algorithms and things like that. Algorithms run international markets. They stop, they spot arbitrage opportunities, so differences, pricing differences, and eliminate them really quickly. And that's been the case since the early 2010s and potentially, you know, earlier on in some instances. So, and that hasn't stopped banks getting bigger, and it didn't necessarily replace any jobs in doing that. What it did was it sped things up and made things far more accurate, I guess, from that perspective. So in the old days, in the 1990s, you might have found a difference between a foreign exchange rate being quoted in New Zealand and a foreign exchange rate being quoted in Singapore, and you could have taken advantage of that. Those are eaten up really quickly by these high speed processes run by algorithms. So that's one point to note. I think the second key thing around this job replacement is that, at the moment, what we're seeing is actually everybody's job has the potential to be replaced, or not replaced, augmented by about 30%. So we're not seeing entire jobs disappear. What we're seeing are roles changing. So, and there's a key difference there. It doesn't mean to say that you know, I can't guarantee to you what's going to happen in the future, but what we're seeing at the moment is somewhere between 30 and 40% of people's roles are being impacted or changed by generative AI, or have the potential to be. And I think the third thing that I'd want to note in this area is that New Zealand has a really quite a large productivity gap. And I'm not going to quote any numbers because I always get in trouble when I quote numbers.
I think we're well aware of that. Yeah, we hear it quite a bit.
Mm. Yeah. So for us in New Zealand, there's a really good opportunity to use generative AI and other AI tools to answer that productivity gap. And I think that's what we're seeing. I think that's one of the reasons why we're seeing 96% efficiency improvement reported, but only 8% with any sort of job losses. Because what I think you're seeing is that people starting to work smarter. Mm. And if you think about the fact, and I'm going to quote some numbers that were put out by AWS last year, because then I won't get into trouble because it's not my numbers, it's theirs. Their calculation was that, and they were quoting, OECD numbers or something like that at the time, was that if you produced a widget in the United States and you worked from 9 to 5 and it took you from 9 to 5 to produce that widget, if you were trying to produce the same widget in Australia, it would take you until 10 o'clock at night to produce the same thing. And if you were trying to produce the same widget in New Zealand, it would take you until 2 a.m. in the morning.
Oh.
So it's not that we don't work hard, because we do. It's just that we're not working as efficiently as those workers in either Australia or the United States. And from a year-on-year perspective, that's about a 25-year. And in normal times, it's about a 25-year productivity gap. What this tool set allows you to do is to answer some of that. And wouldn't it be amazing to have some time back in your life to do some things that you want to do?
Yeah. Is that productivity differential because we're not using the best tools, or because we go at a slower speed? Yeah. Anyway, what do you think?
I'm not an expert in that, so I wouldn't really like to comment. I hear lots of different stories about why that might be. Some people say it's because organisations in New Zealand haven't necessarily completed their digital journey, and there's a few things that we could put that, there's a few simple fixes out there. Other people might say it's because we've relied on bringing in cheap labour from overseas for too long.
Yep.
And it certainly, when I spent some time in the UK, and that was certainly one of the noticeable things there. And when you do that, there's no financial incentive to innovate or to adopt new things. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not an economist.
Yep.
So
ask AI, they'll tell you. the concerns of our audience, I just know, and myself as well, are around. Well, first of all, with all new technologies, there's a lot of enthusiasm, and a lot of the sell is done on convenience. This will make things so much easier, and people can see how that could work. But also there are other things to consider, aren't there, like privacy, what happens to data that belongs to you. I'm thinking in the government space, this has the potential for massive instantaneous data sharing between government departments. Some that should be siloed because of the reach and what that overlap could mean, and it goes on. How much thought do you give to, let me call them, the possible downsides, and how can we avoid some of them?
So we've done a lot of work in this space already, and there are some really good privacy rules, there's privacy guidance actually that's been put out by the Office of the Privacy Commissioner. Around AI, that was put out in September of last year. It's still really valid, and they're doing more work in that space. I think I'd start with people who are out there in organisations who've kind of ignored AI or who haven't done anything at all. And what I'd really recommend you do is go to a website that we've created called AIgovernance.nz. And in there, you will find free tool sets curated for, so best practice tool sets curated for a New Zealand environment. That will help you get on the journey to making sure that you're aware and cognizant of the artificial intelligence that you're using, because whether you've adopted Gen AI or not, it's impacting your everyday. I mean, you'll be fully aware that, as soon as you look at a news feed, there's an algorithm sitting in the background that's decided to serve you up certain information, whatever information it is. So thinking that you're not impacted by it is I don't want to say, I don't want you,
naive.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. So take a look. Have a look at there's a tool set called Workshop Essentials. And what that's aimed at is organizations and people who don't necessarily have the financial wherewithal to employ external advice, or people, or organizations who are not ready to employ external advisors and want to get their own house in order first. And what it does is provide you with some tool sets to sit down and actually think about what your approach to responsible AI is going to be. And I think that's the first step. So let's not imagine that it's not happening to us, because it is, and let's get our own houses in order and be cognizant of the impact of the actions that we take.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of a few stories that have been around of late, mainly in the UK. Keir Starmer said 3 weeks ago that the police force would be employing facial recognition, for example, even using it to look at videos of people out protesting and doing things. And presumably AI is at the back of that. And that data is stored. And, next thing you know, you've got someone knocking on your door asking you why you made a slightly offensive post on social media or whatever. And we have seen during the COVID time plenty of people being censored. Now, one has to presume also that AI was used to scrape that social media to find the people at scale that they did to either censor, and I know plenty of people who had that happen to them, or get that visit again. So you can kind of see where I'm going with that on the downside use. I remember that Little Britain show, the person would come and ask a question and they'd be told the computer says no. And also the other fear is, and tell me if I'm jumping ahead too much for where you guys are at, but any talk of a central bank digital currency, the programmable nature of that potentially, again, backed by AI, could see people being denied, what would now be considered normal purchases to, push a particular agenda, maybe climate. We don't want so much meat eaten. You've probably heard all this before. But these are the things we really have to be conscious of, don't we? Because we've had examples already where we've trusted and the trust is found wanting.
Those are certainly capabilities. So that facial recognition technology exists. I do not know the extent to which it's being used in New Zealand, or if indeed it is being used and the only examples I've heard about are from, for example, there's a trial going on.
Supermarket.
I think a supermarket trial going on currently.
Yep.
What we've seen so historically, so several years ago, the last time that it was trialed was that it wasn't terribly useful in New Zealand because our population don't look like Americans.
Okay.
So
who do we look like?
Which is where we look like us.
Yeah.
We look like us.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting.
But the technology's moved on, and I believe it's, I don't know because I'm not an expert in this particular area, but I understand that it's moved on and that one of the reasons why they're doing that trial is to see how effective it is. Is it going to be a useful tool in those sorts of environments? Personally, I would fully support a really simple system. So where you have, so that everybody knows when they are or are not being recorded, and you don't need special cameras for this. You can use CCTV, which is in a lot of shops, but shops generally and banks that have CCTV running have a really simple symbol that sits on the front door, and you can choose to walk in or not. And I think that's the kind of symbol that we need to say we're using facial recognition technology or not.
Okay, that's facial recognition. But if a service is backed up or underpinned by AI, that same disclosure should be there.
I think you'll see in the OPC's guidance that's generally there. It's about being open with the people whose data that you're and only keeping data for the purposes of which you have seed you with. What that relies upon at the moment, though, is people reading the terms and conditions of every app that you download.
Madeline, people don't do that.
Exactly,
yeah.
They don't.
Yeah.
And so,
And more for them, probably. But yeah, people are busy and, you know, there's so much to take in.
Exactly. Yep. And there's a, yeah, I'm here speaking on behalf of the AI Forum, so I can't, I you know, but in a personal, in
I understand.
Personal space, yep. I'd want to see that change a bit. Yeah.
Where can this all go? Because I remember, I mean, I got an interest in aviation. And I actually attended an event commemorating the centennial flight in Washington, D.C. back in 2003, 100 years since the Wright brothers. My grandmother, or my great-grandmother, was alive then, and she was also alive for Neil Armstrong walking on the moon. Now, that is one hell of a progression. And things are speeding up all the time. Where does AI end up, do you think? Have you given much thought to the future of it, the speed at which this accelerates in the way that I just mentioned there, you know, getting to the moon after only 60 years of the first flight. Where can this go, do you think?
You'd need to talk to somebody like Ben Reed, who's a futurist, or Professor Michael Whitbrook, who's also a futurist in this space. It has the potential to, so it's surprised us how quickly it's evolved in the last couple of years. It surprised everybody. Nobody realized that everybody still thought we would still be here having to tell it what to do, and actually it's pretty good at telling itself what to do. It's not perfect, and so there's a lot of work going on in the background to help make sure that it remains responsible and it does the right kinds of things, not the wrong kinds of things. There's a lot of I think from a New Zealand perspective, we can be really really proud of the research and development that goes on in the academic institutions here, because that's where a lot of that work's going on. And we definitely have world leaders from that perspective right here in New Zealand. Don't ever think we're a backwater from this perspective. We're not.
Okay. So we're not. Well, we're kind of early adopter types anyway, I'm always told. Are we?
I don't know. I think we're really good at research and development. Think we're not as good as and we're really good at piloting things. I'm not sure we're as good at adopting technology. And certainly, this one has, and AI has a reputation that is, you know, like when I took over this role in 2.5 years ago, all people wanted to talk to me about was facial recognition technology and cyborgs and when they were going to come and kill us. And so it's kind of got this background story that breeds distrust. And one of the things that we need to do is help people to understand that you can use it responsibly. You can use it to augment your business without making all of your, you know, you can use it to create career mobility within your workforce. And it's about sharing the knowledge and using it responsibly.
Yeah, I interview a lot of people. It's just like we're chatting now. And I've watched a few interviews with interviewers interviewing ChatGTP, the latest version.
Yeah.
And it's freaky, man. Because, I mean, the answers are good, but the way they are answered kind of sounds thoughtful, you know, almost human.
A lot of work goes into making...
I'm sure.
Making them, they're mimics, so it's not a human.
No, but it's brilliantly done.
Mm-hmm. And it's getting better, yeah.
Yeah, to the point where I'm thinking you probably... I mean, there might be some cues that give it away here and there, but to just the first brush, listen to something like that, you could quite easily believe you're hearing a real person. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You're often, I'm not going to name names, but some organizations have not necessarily played ball with and are using, I know there's a report at the moment in the BBC about one particular company using voiceover artists, actual voices, synthesizing them and using them.
Yeah.
And there are stories, you know, I mean, there's the question of how large language models came across all of their information is a whole nother, that's a whole nother series.
Yeah, another interview. All right.
A whole nother
one. Okay, so it's a biannual report you're doing, so.
That's right, yeah. So this was the benchmark.
Yeah.
We're going to run the next one in November. Absolutely, if you want to have your say, get in there and respond to it in November, that's what we want. Is we want to get up to a point where we've got a really nice large sample size. So we're talking like a couple of thousand organizations, so that we can really start to say this is meaningful data.
Must be quite exciting to be involved in this.
It is. It's really busy.
At the cutting edge of things?
It's very busy. That's what I can say. That's what I can say. But I think that with that comes the responsibility of providing things like we do, like those tool sets I was talking about, helping people to stay on the side of the gods and do the things that they intend to do and not walk into the traps that are out there.
Madeline Newman, who is the executive director of the AI Forum, number three, as she's pointed out, been there for 2.5 years. Really interesting chat. Thank you, Madeline.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.